This is Amp Hour Podcast, released May 10th, 2020, episode 492, More Electronic Consultant Impedance Magic. Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
Hi, I'm Alex Klemai of Arc Electronics.
Hi, I'm Jeremiah Gillis of Embedded Bytes Incorporated.
Hi, I'm Kieran O'Leary of Mixed Signal Systems in Edinburgh and Scotland.
Well, welcome to another electronics consultant impedance matching episode to Electric Boogaloo. I don't know what we're going to call it, but either way, we're all meeting here, and we are all meeting here because we know each other from the Electronics Consulting Forum that started from this last episode. So if people remember on episode 409, we had Dave Young and Eric Thompson and Peter Ezentemsky. And we basically did a show and we were talking about like, why isn't there a forum about this? And then we started one and then all these people showed up and we've been talking about stuff ever since then. And now you're hearing from some of those people, including Kieran, who we've heard from before. So Kieran has already been on the show before. So how about Alex and Jeremiah? Why don't you guys introduce yourselves? Well, obviously you introduced yourselves already, but tell us a little bit about your consultancies and what you guys are working on these days.
Sure, I'll go first. Yeah, so I'm Alex Klemai of Arc Electronics, obviously. And yeah, I mostly do electrical engineering, schematics, printed circuit boards. I do a little bit of embedded firmware, a little bit of embedded software. And yeah, that's what I do.
Great.
And I'm Jeremiah Gillis. My company is Embedded Bytes, like I mentioned before. I primarily do embedded firmware in a lot of different areas like automotive field, consumer electronics, and I'm getting more into medical devices now. I also do a little bit of hardware design, and I'm trying to do more of that just to keep my skills up.
And Kieran, why don't you give a quick refresher for people? We'll obviously link in the episode, but for people who haven't listened to the episode yet.
Sure. So the clue's in the name, Mixed Signal Systems. So it's an embedded systems design services house, and it's got a focus on low noise, high performance analog and mixed signal systems with the supporting embedded firmware, low level bare metal firmware development, but mostly on the hardware side, and certainly not as high up the stack as an Android or iPhone app.
That's great. Well, you know, welcome all of you. That's great. I think the other thing that's interesting is that we're all, I'm in a big city, in downtown in a big city, and the rest of you are kind of pretty spread out. Now, not necessarily small towns, but we're kind of all over the place. So Alex, you're in Utah. Jeremiah, you're in Montana. And Kieran, you're in Edinburgh, you mentioned. So that's kind of...
Edinburgh, yeah.
Yeah. So like pretty... Oh, Wyoming. Sorry, I thought you were Montana. Sorry about that. So yeah, Jeremiah, Wyoming, how is it being that remote?
It's interesting. I like the outdoors and I like rural areas. So Wyoming's great for that. But for a client base, it's absolutely terrible. all my clients are 100% remote. So I'm hoping one day that maybe I'll have some clients from Wyoming or Montana. But You know how it is.
They'll only be a couple hundred miles away or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Alex, you, a lot of remote for you as well?
Yeah, I'd say last year I was maybe 50-50 remote and local. Pretty much all of my work has come from word of mouth, and I've had a few jobs here in the Salt Lake area. And my previous full-time employment was at a drone startup. And through that, I've been getting a lot of drone work, and all of that has been remote up until recently. And actually this week I just got a local, well, they're about 45 minutes away, but semi-local client in on that regard. So yeah, I don't know. I'm still about half and half remote and local.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great. I mean, it's interesting too, like as we, you know, so we were talking a little bit before the show about COVID, obviously is going to be something we're going to talk about in, you know, in broad terms at least, but a lot of people are switching to remote right now. And for some people, it's a big switch. For people like Jeremiah, I'm sure when you're all remote anyways, maybe it's not that big a deal. You know, like it's not a huge switch, but it mindset may be a little bit different.
Yeah, definitely. The mindset is different because even though I'm 100% remote, usually I'm talking with client engineers from clients every day or video chat or whatever. And now that a lot of them are shut down, it's even more remote. So I have to get my social interaction just from my family that lives near me.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed the incidence of remote Zoom happy hours is gone up quite a bit. One of my buddies had like a weird background, just kind of like hanging out when I called him today for work. And I was like, what's going on with that? You know?
Yeah, I think people are very adaptable. They here in Edinburgh, there's a bunch of my former colleagues from Wolfson, and they've all moved on to different things. But about once a month, we meet up for burger and beer. But yeah, that's obviously off the cards at the moment. So we've started doing it on Zoom.
Yep.
You know, so just at lunchtime, once a fortnight, just to see how everybody's doing. And the first couple were interesting. Everybody, lots of stories. But now the topics for discussion are quite limited. You know,
it's that's
just,
right.
I saw an aircraft flying overhead today. How about you?
Yeah. What kind was it? Oh, my God. Start like a cargo cult or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the weather is good here at the moment, so people are able to get out into their gardens and everything, so that's not too bad.
Yeah, that helps. That helps. Yeah, I mean, the switching to remote thing, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't talk to a lot of people that are, you know, full-time engineers all that often anymore. I mean, I guess, you know, I still have some friends that do it and whatever, but they're all kind of heads down, so I don't hear as much about it, but a lot of the people that I do talk to who are already remote, they're like, yeah, you know, doesn't really change all that much, you know, that nothing must have changed my workflow.
Yeah. It's pretty much all the same to me. I kind of lost track of how many weeks that we've technically been in kind of this shelter in place style thing here. It's not as strict here in Utah. But yeah, other than my partner, she's working from home full time. Normally she would be going in. That's really the only change for me.
Yeah, it's a little different for me. One of my clients who I actually used to work for, they're engineers. They're in Wisconsin. So, you know, that they had that shutdown and they're still shut down, I think, through towards the end of this month. So they actually sent all the employees home and only a very small group of the engineers are working part-time. So I don't get to talk to them that much.
Mm. Oh, like they're not even working. They're like not working at all. Like,
yeah, they're like not even working at all.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. They're furloughed. They're working like maybe 50% or 40%, just depending on what they're doing. So.
Oh, wow. So broadly, has that been impacting your business or everyone's business? I mean, what are you guys seeing on the horizon or what do you see in your own businesses, I guess?
Yeah, it's impacted my business. Actually starting towards the beginning of this year, like my billable hours have gone down a lot. So I've actually been working on some of my own projects and also volunteering and something else that's happening in Wyoming that I could discuss a little bit later, and also looking for new clients, just networking, because I'd like to have more billable hours. So,
yeah. Yeah. Chasing that money, that cash flow, I suppose, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just want to stay in business, so.
Right. Yeah, I mean, one of the things I think about is like with networking, it's so tough to, you know, it's tough on a normal day to meet people and, you know, you go to trade shows, you go to whatever, and now it's like, oh, networking over Zoom or networking over whatever's out there, you know? I mean, Kieran, Alex, have you guys seen any drops?
For me, it pretty much echoes what Jeremiah had said, you know, like at the start of the year, you know, it looked like it was going to be quite a prosperous 2020. But luckily so far, you know, I sustained my existing clients and one or two of them, you know, some businesses are going to do better or others, you know, better than others out of the lockdowns that are enforced around the world. And one or two of my clients are working on products that benefit from the current situation, and others, of course, there's declining market, you know, markets. So they've got a bit of a squeeze on at the moment. So yeah, I'm just trying to do things that'll help me upskill and keep the business operational through kind of the next couple of months. And you know, there's voluntary activities going on here in Scotland as well, which we can speak about. But it's interesting to see that that's echoed, you know, around the world.
Yeah, I mean, my work's been like weird and spotty, but like I think it does depend on sector too. So like having clients that are like industrial or Jeremiah said medical too, that could be super. You know, some people, medical clients might be billing more right now versus other. You know, it's just like such a weird. But then there's always like cash flow issues and like, oh, we're gonna tighten up and we're gonna watch every payment that we do and all that silliness. So
yeah, I was way too busy last summer. I was pretty much full-time billable hours for many months in a row. And I was having a new client, potential client, contact me about every week or two. And I was having to turn them away into the fall and then kind of into the holidays.
The good old days.
Yeah. Stuff started slowing down into the holidays and the first couple months of this year. And I was maybe doing half of what I was doing before. And started working on my own projects and products and getting that going. But now I'm pretty much back to being full-time billable. So it's actually picking up for me now.
Yeah. So Alex, you've posted about your product before. What is it that you're making? Because I like the idea of having like a project that you can kind of go back to. You'd kind of like, maybe not in the back burner, but just like kind of thinking about things that you are using for personal development or maybe a small amount of cash flow or just because you want it, you need this thing out in the world.
Yeah. I mean, last year I worked on it. I designed and started shipping the LiPow charger. That's a USB-C power delivery input, lithium polymer battery charger. It'll charge 2 to 6S or 2 to 4S. Lithium polymer batteries with an XT60 output and balance. It'll do balancing and everything too. So that I just wanted a project to do all the hardware, firmware, and get it through, you know, do a test fixture that programs it and calibrates it and get it shipping. So that was my last year's product. And, you know, I've got that up on Tindy. I also have a little regulator module off of that is up on Tindy as well. It's a little TI programmable regulator that sells pretty well. And then my latest one that I started last fall when things started slowing down is a kind of a reference design smart battery for drones for Pixhawk. And I'm actually involved in the Pixhawk UAV.
What does Pixhawk mean?
Pixhawk is the open source like drone hardware, like autopilot standard.
Okay.
You know, so you have Pixhawk hardware and then you can have different flight control software stacks that run on top of it, like ArduPilot and PX4. So this will be a kind of a UAV can smart battery for that ecosystem. And I've got prototypes of that. That's what I was working on earlier this year when things were a little slower, and I'm working on getting that built with a partner in China to get that shipping.
Nice. Nice. Jeremiah and Kieran, are you guys doing your own? Kieran, you do courses, right? You kind of teach people for the mixed signal stuff, right?
Yeah. Lots of signal integrity courses and the like. So I think on the, the Discord app, I think I'd shared a picture of some two-layer boards that I've started developing. And you know, when things are busy and never really have time to work on them, but they're boards that are designed, you know, to intentionally have bad signal integrity properties to demonstrate in a controlled manner what can go wrong.
I could have designed you one of those for free.
I think pretty much everybody can. But I just haven't got around to, you know, to writing any blog posts on them yet. But now that things are a bit quieter, maybe I will, or I'll post pictures of the boards on Twitter. But they're just a series of boards that focus on one particular signal integrity problem or even, you know, an electrical science phenomenon like, you know, current following the path of least impedance on a PCB, and then the board is to demonstrate that in reality, because these things are all very interesting and easy to demonstrate using field solvers, but not everybody has access to those tools, and it's still a simulation, you know, and the map is not the terrain, so it's perhaps a bit more useful to, you know, for people to be able to see them in reality and real hardware. So that's what I've been doing with my downtime, and I guess every cloud has a silver lining, so I'm kind of hoping to be able to do some good blog posts or videos, you know, using those boards over the next couple of months.
Yeah, that's a great thing. Especially because like signal integrity is like so kind of, I mean, it is very math heavy, right? If you really want to do solvers and stuff, you don't have to do it if you're using software, obviously, but like the idea of making it tangible and like measurable is like awesome. I love that idea. Being able to kind of like show it on the bench.
It is one of those fields where you can really go down as, you know, as deep as you like in the physics. You know, you can go down to one of the, you know, the four fundamental forces, you know, electromagnetism, but you don't need to. You hear people say, oh, you know, RF is a black art, or, you know, black magic, or analog design is black magic. And of course it isn't, because the physics doesn't change. It's just perhaps you need an appreciation of the physical properties that you're dealing with. But you can do a lot without having, you know, a PhD in electromagnetics or anything like that. And actually,
it's good because I'm not coming by one of those anytime soon.
I've shown the boards to quite a few academics that I knock across along the way, and they're all fascinated by them, because they're, oh yeah, we really want that, because if you're doing equations and simulations and everything, they can tell that people are just dying a slow death listening to them, whereas if you can just connect it up to a scope or spectrum analyzer and you go, okay, you've paid for a 20 bit ADC and you're only getting 12 bit performance, like, you know, here's where the other 8 bits are, you know, and people tend to be quite interested, and it's more engaging. It's the same as anything else. If you can pick up something and hold it, it's quite engaging. And trying to keep the boards as simple as possible, I mean, they're two layer boards, 10 centimeter aside, and that's it, and you can demonstrate a lot with that.
Yeah, that's great. Jeremiah, you said you're also doing some hardware on the side?
No, unfortunately not. I actually right now just have a notebook of ideas that I'm thinking about. Like, I have some good ideas, but it's very niche. For like, I have one of my hobbies, I have a Mazda RX-7 that I built up and stuff, and I wanted to do like water injection, so, you know, driving like a brushless pump, injecting water into it so you could turn up the boost, make more horsepower and such. But I'm trying to think of a different idea that would be more generalized, that maybe the general public might find interesting, or the tech community. So
yeah, it can be hard to do. I do like, so I'm on the path that Alex was talking about with the reference design idea. And I was thinking about, so when Ryan Cousins was on here from Snickerdoodle, which is Critkl, KRTKL, that wonderful company name, from when he was on, he talked about how the Snickerdoodle board acts as a reference design. And Alex, maybe you could speak to this kind of thing, but like having like reference design, or even just projects more broadly, just projects out in the wild, you know, and using that as a way to like kind of promote yourself and your business. And so at some point, someone's going to walk up to you and be like, I need something that looks kind of like that. Can you do that for me? And like, oh yes, actually, that's what I do. have you guys seen that kind of thing?
Yeah. On my side, there's been, with the batteries at least, you know, there's a lot of people who want smart batteries out there and want to just buy one. So, you know, I actually taken the time to develop it and test it and have that solid hard tested hardware and firmware will bring a lot of people to you. And that's part of the reason I want to get, you know, a partner to build and ship a kind of standard version to the mass market, and then maybe bring in the companies that want a, you know, slightly different version, you know, different features, battery size, etc., and then I can do the customization on that end.
The riches are in the niches. I forget who said that. Someone was on here, I think. But yeah, making the customs—that's where the dough is.
So when you have a product on Tendi, how do you market it? Do you just have people following you like on social media, or how does that work, Alex?
Yeah, I'm actually really new at, I did work in technical marketing at Keysight. I actually worked with Daniel, who's been advertising on here before, but it's still kind of doing it all myself is new to me. So I've been trying to spend a little more time on social media, on Twitter and LinkedIn, and advertising it. And it did get featured in Hackaday, and that brought on the website, and that brought a lot of interest to it. And yeah, I've been kind of quiet on my Tindy products, advertising them at the moment. I did a little quarantine sale and sold a few, but it's a hard thing when you're working full time to on the design side of things to stop and go do some marketing.
That's a great point. I mean, like, and you know, there's marketing of products, like the actual physical products that you're talking about. There's marketing of services and all that kind of stuff. I mean, do you guys do, I mean, Kieran, you mentioned blogging, but more broadly, do you kind of, aside from being on the Amp Hour, do you hawk your services or your products anywhere else?
Twitter can be quite useful, you know?
Yeah. What kind of leads have you gotten through there?
Yeah, it's, I think you'd mentioned there briefly about having a niche, you know, and it's good to be seen as the guy or the girl, for a particular field. And, you know, there's the book, The Long Tail, you know, where there's a vast array of specialities out there. And if you can find your niche, then it can be quite useful, you know, to have people that, you know, they keep an eye on things. And then when, you know, something pops up, like, for example, they've got a noise problem on a mixed signal board. And they go, oh, yeah, well, I heard that guy on the Amp Hour. I saw something on Twitter. And they go, all right, I'll just track him down. And, it tends to be quite useful. Like, I haven't written a book, but I've heard a number of authors say the same thing, like that they make no money out of the book, but the being seen as the authority in a given area is quite helpful.
Yeah, Greg Charvat, former guest a couple times, he talked about that for the small signal radar stuff, and that's how he got into like Humatics, where he is now, and Butterfly Networks, and obviously he's well connected anyways, but like, yeah, that kind of thing of like being the guy or the gal, like you said. I mean, like being that expert definitely helps, being called by CNN like he was, and similar things.
Yeah, like, I mean, everybody needs a break somewhere, like, you know, so, giving yourself those opportunities is all you can do. You know, just try to put yourself in a position. And most people that have a passion for an area, you know, not everybody wants to do a YouTube channel, and, you know, some guys prefer to write and some people like podcasts, you know, there's a whole variety of stuff, and some people are better, you know, kind of face to face, which is difficult at the moment, but there's usually an outlet for people in most communities. I think you just have to try to find the one that works for you.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I think it is tough. I mean, like, I've gone through writing and audio and video and all that other stuff, and, you know, finding the one that fits your workflow, I think, is like I think the workflow is kind of where it really comes down to it. And like the kind of having a schedule. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I've been like trying to really have a daily schedule, and like, I haven't worked in writing or anything like that, but obviously the Amp Hour is a part of my week every week. Do you like keep kind of regimented in that way?
For sure. I work from home all the time, so that's like a double-edged sword there, where if you're very regimented and have a schedule and you stick to it, you could get a lot done. You could be actually probably more productive than being in a work environment, like a traditional employer work environment, because there's less distractions. But when you have so many hobbies and things going on at home too, if you let that slip in, you kind of get nailed and your productivity goes way down. So,
yeah, it's true. And if those Zoom happy hours creep in too, you know, eventually then your board layouts get real messy and your code starts to go real bad. I don't know.
Yeah. Look, I moved apartment recently. My wife and I bought a new apartment here in Edinburgh, and the home office now doesn't have any windows. So, so it's like being in a prison cell, but depending on my mood, it can be highly effective. You know, I can be highly productive, or, another day, like, it's just like you're crawling the walls, like, you know, and I have no idea if it's day or night. Like, but right. I do struggle to keep a 9-to-5, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, right now I'm just, I'll just pop upstairs at 9 p.m. to keep soldering something. It's like, no, dummy, go back downstairs and, you know, hang out and watch some TV and turn your brain off for a while. That's the hard part, is turning your brain off, I think.
Yeah, I just noticed, actually, just as I said that, it's 10 past one in the morning here in Edinburgh.
Yeah, right.
and I'd completely forgotten, you know, it's just, well, I tend to be a bit of a night owl anyway, but yeah, like, when you don't have that interaction, you know, particularly now when even if I have local clients, I'm not seeing them and they're all flexible, you know, they have kids and they have to work around that when the kids are in bed and everything. It's really easy to, you know, to lose track of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty bad about keeping a regular schedule. My partner and I tend to end up working late, but we will go for a bike ride or something in the middle of the day in the nicest part of the day, and then use up our evenings when it's not as nice. But, you know, the weather's getting really good here, so it's really hard to be inside in the middle of the day. It's not too hot yet. It's just like the perfect temperature. So I struggle with that, being inside when it's so nice out.
I feel like you should also talk about the video you have where you shared, I think I talked about it on the show before, but where you have the drone following you as you're like mountain biking. That is awesome. Where was that? Where is that taken?
That was taken about 15, 20 minutes from here up in an area called Jeremy Ranch. That was actually the Skydio, their first drone. Their new drone is supposedly even better. I haven't seen it yet, but I know some people that work there, and it's pretty cool. But yeah, I live in a pretty nice area.
Yeah, it was very picturesque. I guess you all kind of do, right? I mean, like Utah, Wyoming, Scotland. It's some nice stuff. I have buildings in Chicago.
In Chicago, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Urban jungle. The buildings get old after a while. What about, you know, keeping up on things? So, I mean, I assume, you know, now that we're 25 minutes in, I should probably say that a lot of people listening are not going to be like, oh, well, this is definitely for me. But, you know, people might be interested. I think some people are interested in the lifestyle. Some people are interested in like how the work goes. One thing that I think is universal is everybody's trying to learn more, you know, in their job and trying to get better at what they do. How do you guys keep up on top of kind of the latest stuff? Because that's something I've personally struggled with.
Well, for me, actually, to be honest with you, I find a couple of the leading podcasts really quite helpful. Like, the Amp Hour, for example, or
don't pander. Come on,
But genuinely, it's or Embedded, Alicia White. You can find some really interesting guests, and for example. You know, machine learning is an area where, you know, I don't have a direct involvement with, but if somebody wants to use a GPU or an FPGA in a high performance system, then I don't need to know everything on earth about machine learning or AI or anything like that. But an appreciation of the type of modules that are used and the levels of power consumption that these things draw and everything, it's really quite helpful to have a domain expert speaking, and you pick out of it what's useful to you out of the hour or 90 minutes that somebody will be speaking, and then of course it's up to you to follow up on that if you see fit. Like, but I think nowadays there's no shortage of information, you know, in YouTube or podcasts or even Hackaday. It's trying to find interesting people and then picking their brains.
Yeah,
for me anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead, Jeremiah. I know you want to.
Oh, yeah, I do. I was going to say, well, some of you might not know, but Wyoming's pretty rural, like under 600,000. And I live in a town that's only 10,000 people. And my dad lives in a town that's only 10 people. So,
wow.
They have a post office. Anyways, just to match what Karen's saying, I actually do internet, go on the Udemy. I'm just improving, since I do a lot of embedded firmware, I'm just trying to improve that. And so I've just been taking some classes there.
It's great.
And also I have some friends in a few different universities that I talk to just to see what they're teaching now, see what, you know, the job market's like, and just trying to learn. Actually, that is another good point too, is like, sometimes I do, when I'm looking for job postings, not for myself, I'm just seeing what companies are targeting, and if it's new or something that I don't know, sometimes I just go research it. But it's really a lot of self-learning for me.
Well, that's a great idea. Yeah, I watched the, I have a, like a word watch thing on Hacker News. And so like anytime PCB comes up, I like go and see what they're talking about. And sometimes it's silly, but a lot of them, they have a monthly who's hiring thread and then who wants to be hired, and seeing kind of like what the, that's obviously very software focused, but like seeing like the, what people are looking for or what they're, you know, what skills they have on offer. I always think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. For me, it's mostly podcasts. I tend to be so busy that most of the time I'm either working or going out and exercising or driving somewhere, and I fill that time by listening to podcasts. But otherwise, it's app notes and all the usual stuff that you come across on your average day working.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. All right, well, this magic worked last time. I said, why isn't there a forum for consultants? And then we did that. Idea I had, and I'm not sure if it would work actually. It was like, so I also obviously like listening to podcasts. I like listening to just, I think audio, not everybody learns by audio, but I think at least the four of us, we are very much in that camp. I think many of the listeners here are going to be obviously, but the idea was like, what if you just had, it came from the Audm, A-U-D-M, which is like an audio service. They do like long form content and they read it. Basically they turn it into podcasts for you, and they just got bought by New York Times. And I was thinking like, I'm not sure if it would work because of like diagrams and the physical or like the visual nature of it, but like, what if that was for like technical journals and like, and similar things where you could have someone like kind of just reading you articles instead of having to consume them? I don't know. Like it's slower. Some people prefer reading, but like, you know, I thought that would be kind of an interesting idea of like reading you the latest journals or, you know, summarizing information or whatever, you know, like the Amp Hour, but with actual like thought behind it.
Yeah, I noticed Audm just a couple of weeks ago, and they're going, oh my god, this is amazing, you know. Yeah. And yeah, like you say, I mean, it, you know, it tends to be kind of from respected publications or whatever, like, you know, large established newspapers and that, and you know, magazines like the New Yorker and stuff. But yeah, I do think it's an interesting concept, because sometimes you think, concepts that are very mathematical in nature, technical in nature, oh, you can't do it without diagrams and that. But I use Audible a lot, and you know, quite a number of books that you would expect to be difficult to listen to and absorb the information by somebody reading it, it works quite well. Now, you mightn't get everything.
Yeah.
A lot of the time you just need somebody to express the concepts to you, you know, at the end of the day.
Right. Well, it's like that sampling idea, right? Like Jeremiah, I think, was saying about like just kind of knowing what's out there first. So that, you know, you're not going to do a deep dive, but you need to know kind of what's new, what's hot, like what should you be researching in depth, you know, and looking into what, or like Alex said, like what app note should you be going to read, you know, instead of someone reading you an app note. And then Jim Williams drew this little thing, and then he had an op amp here, and it was connected to a transformer. You know, it's like, I don't know if that would work.
I think a big part of it is we stare at screens all day working on code or schematics or printed circuit boards, other than when we're soldering. But I think that's the draw of audio and podcasts, is you can listen to it while you're driving or exercising or doing something else and kind of get lost in thought a little bit and not be staring at a screen for more hours of the day.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I got so hard up for new stuff, I went back and listened to the Babaverse books. I'm currently reworking through all the Babaverse books because I love them so much. But highly recommended if people haven't listened to those yet or watched or read them.
Yeah, I've been trying to find new podcasts, and I've even started going back over earlier episodes of podcasts that I've listened to for years, and I maybe have, you know, forgotten the earlier episodes. But I mean, there's a podcast for everything you can imagine. I mean, there's probably a COVID-19 podcast, you know. I mean, they're just endless, like, you know, and you can dip in and out. But you know, there's quite a few drone podcasts now, which I think is interesting. You know, it's a field, you know, barring military UAVs, like, but it's a field that didn't exist maybe 10 years ago, and now there's just oodles of drone podcasts. And you know, there's, you know, you can maybe they're only 20, 30 minutes each. But now you can learn a lot that way because, you know, I think being able to dip in and get the concepts and, you know, just file it away in your mind until you need it is the way to go, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the hard thing, I think I've mentioned on the show before, but like I used to get in a lot of trouble because I would be like, oh, well, on a podcast, I heard this and this and this. And, you know, people would be like, shut up, Chris. We don't, you know, like you can only use it so much. So then I started switching it to, well, I heard from a friend about this new thing. It was the same thing with Reddit too. I was like, oh, I saw this on Reddit. No, a friend told me or showed me this thing. Gotta be creative in terms of how you share your learnings.
Yeah, I have it on good authority.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that Autumn for Engineers idea will ever come up, but it's an idea I have. It's tough to learn things, you know. Like, and I think the other thing too. So, like, one of the things that I tried last year was I tried hiring tutors, and I think it worked pretty well. But I think kind of one of the things that I deal with is just kind of like, obviously, you know, get a room of consultants or engineers together, and eventually imposter syndrome is going to come up, but like, I think it's really just not having, even before imposter syndrome, is just like not having someone to bounce ideas off of. That's one of the things that I really struggle with too, of just like, you know, being on your own, needing to be rigorous. I mean, what do you guys do for being rigorous for your clients and in your electronics work, so you don't blow up that board or send out a bad set of Gerbers or something like that?
Well, this is an area that I've been looking at a bit lately. I mean, I feel like that the quality of my deliverables and hardware is quite good. I've been doing it a long time. I have my processes in place, and it's just, you know, standard quality control. But firmware is an area that I'm working on, you know, more and more, and I want to do better with that. And there's some great resources out there for software in general and embedded systems in particular, but a lot of it is, you know, from people kind of, you know, much more qualified than me, seems to be like getting it through to engineers that this is a job and you're a professional and there's an expectation that you deliver a quality product. You know, it's, oh, I hacked it together. And, you know, that as an industry, you know, the embedded systems industry, you know, it needs to mature. And that and that mindset is very much the first step, you know, that the documentation is as much a part of the product as, you know, as the binary that you release to a client. And once you clear that hurdle, then it's just about providing the tools, you know, and there's some, you know, a variety of tools out there. But
are you saying that the like getting approval to bill for documentation, or are you saying just putting it on yourself to actually do it and be rigorous about it?
It's both. I mean, being rigorous on a personal level or, you know, at a company-wide level is important. And I think the cream will rise to the top ultimately over, you know, over years or decades. Like, you see the companies that take quality seriously are the ones that go the distance. Of course, what you say about like trying to get a customer to buy in up front or a client to buy in up front, I think you really have to have a good story and a good narrative that you can support, hopefully with evidence, but you have to be able to communicate the value of that very clearly. I can't remember where I heard it, but on some podcast recently, I'd been listening to an episode and somebody had said
I think you mean a friend told you.
yeah, I have it on good authority. Yeah, Harvard yeah, right, Business right. Review or something. But the there was three quotes for a block of work, and the third quote, this guy was telling the story, his quote was multiples of the other two quotes, but his company got the business. And the perception of the client was that, okay, we got three quotes, I mean, you're off the charts, like, you know, you're kind of like Six Sigma, you're standard deviations away from the other quotes, but but clearly you had thought about all the consequences down the line of what if, you know. And I think as a consultant or as a contractor, you kind of have an obligation to your clients to bring more than, you know, a hex file or a set of Gerbers. You know, they're paying you for your experience and the contribution that you can make. And if you can communicate your value, you know, say, okay, well, I can give you the Gerbers, but when you bring these Gerbers to your EMC house, you know, to get your certification, CE marking or FCC or whatever it might be, this board, it's got a very good chance of passing first time. Now, you can pay me a little bit more for one good board that's fully documented and you know, it's been designed, or you can pay somebody else for four boards, you know, and they're only right.
Testing fees
exactly and that's the thing, and a lot of the time, you know, I work with startups and they have no idea, you know, the product testing for hardware can be so expensive, you know, regulatory and compliance testing can be so expensive, and that's what you offer. So being able to communicate that effectively up front, you know, okay, look, I charge you a little bit more, maybe a lot more, but ultimately you're going to get it back, because when I tell you your product will be on the market in 3 months, it will be on the market in 3 months or 6 months or 9 months, whatever it may be. But of course, communicating that can be difficult, and some clients never want to hear it. You know, you get
right.
You
know, right. They want the short term cost. They want to see that. Oh no, it's only $10,000 for this thing, because that's what I can get approved. Right.
Yeah. 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 So, and I'm curious to hear you know, how the other guys deal with this, because I'd imagine it's a problem the world over. It always has been, and probably always will be.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chris, I think you've talked about this before, where there's a difference between being kind of a contractor and being a consultant, where in the contracting role, you're maybe stepping in and helping out in a larger organization, and they already have some EEs or firmware guys on staff, and you're working with them. So there's people reviewing, you know, you're reviewing their stuff and they're reviewing your stuff, and you have some oversight in both directions, versus you come into a small startup and you're the EE or the firmware engineer. Yep. And that's,
yeah, the buck stops with you, right?
Yeah. And I've had it both ways. Mostly I'm working with other people, where they can review my work. And that's been very helpful, because it's nice not to, you know, you can come back and review your stuff again and again and not catch the thing that's going to cause the problem. So
Jeremiah, you're not getting out of this one, man. So you got to answer too.
Oh, I'm going to answer for sure. Well, okay, actually, great. Yeah. One of my newer clients that I've worked with for the past years in the medical industry. So, you know, you got that FDA, and they're very rigorous on everything. And that's, you know, good for medical products. And I've actually learned a lot from there, because this client also works with like another company who does all of the medical requirements for the FDA. So a lot of the things that I worked on with documentation and integration testing and all that stuff, all those documents get sent to them and they can look at it, and they've been giving feedback, and, you know, I have to fix to make the document exactly how they want, so the FDA approves the submission. And I think I could take some of this back now and apply it to the other industries that I work in, because they're not so rigorous.
So what are some of those things that you're talking about there? Like what from the medical industry is extensible?
Just how like the firmware, every single thing is documented in it. So it has requirements. And I mean, they're very detailed and specific. There's unit testing, which actually has to link back to each of those requirements and call out the exact, you know, section number and all of that.
Mm. And you're like, give me some more of this. I love this.
Well, I mean, I like, it's okay, but I think it just gives me more knowledge, and I could take what their concepts are and apply them to like consumer electronics or something. I could just give documentation that's more complete that the client will basically like, I don't know. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. Hmm. I don't know. I've read, there's a book called I asked about this on Twitter a couple years ago too, about like checklists and stuff like that too. I mean, do you guys do anything like that of like formalized? I guess Jeremiah, you're kind of talking about formalized process with firmware. I mean, are there other things that you're kind of self-imposing on yourself that might be a good resource for people to think about, like checklists or similar things? Okay, I'll take that as a no.
I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. I mean, like these days, my main thing is like, you know, like journaling and similar kind of things. I mean, that's not really rigorous, I guess, but it's a way to track it's beyond just like tracking hours. It's actually tracking what I was doing, how I was, you know, it's quasi lab notebook ish, but it's not really, I don't know if there's anything like that. I guess on the documentation side, you know, Kieran, you mentioned documentation.
Yeah. Yeah, just more generally, I guess. I mean, for my setup for tracking time and everything, and I know that's required for billing, but in terms of quality and closing the loop, and you know, and how close you're coming to your time estimates for projects and so forth, I use Asana and to manage the projects, and a plugin called EverHour, to track the time, and you can just literally, hit play in Asana when you're working on a task, and it generates all the CSV reports and everything, and I think that's quite useful. Of course, financially it's required, but the being able to close the loop, I think a lot of the time you have the processes, and you say, okay, I'll track that, but you never close the loop on how effective your estimate was. And there's a very good book or series of books, and it's called How to Measure Anything, and I think the guy's name was Douglas Hubbard or something along those lines. But he talks about how to measure the intangibles in business, and that was very, very useful. Like, and one of the big tips out of that I think is quite useful is when you have your project meetings, whether it's agile, I mean, the methodology doesn't really matter, but the question is, okay, how far along are you? And so, I'm about 80% of the way done. And that just means 80% of the time is gone. it has no correlation with how much of the work is done. And his thing is, it's a really interesting book, but it's, if you're doing a schematic or whatever, you don't say, I've 70% of the schematic done. It's, you break down each, the level of, resolution that you need, is a yes no answer at the project report, so is it like
is the MCU done, is the power supply system done, right? So it's more like a go no go of rocket engine.
Yeah, and then it makes it very simple for the project manager. Is it done? No. Okay. Well then, okay, we need to look at why that's the case, and that's proved very effective for me. And then much more specific for hardware guys, what I found is really useful is with a schematic, and because we work remotely a lot with my clients, for schematics. I take a given page in a schematic, and every block in the schematic gets, there's a little border drawn around the circuit in the schematic, and it's given a number. So if it's on page one of the schematic, it's 1.1, and then the next section is 1.2, 1.3, 1.4. And then when you come to do the schematic review, even when it's done remotely and over Zoom or Skype or whatever, you're just sitting there with a page, piece of paper. Okay. Everybody happy with section 1.1? Yes, tick. Oh, everybody, wow. And people.
I'm stealing that one for sure. That's great.
So, and maybe I'll put it up on Twitter. You can link to it, picture of one of my schematics. Yeah. But it, and then you, well, I use Eagle more than KiCad, but, or KiCad, sorry. Always have to keep everybody happy. But it just means when you're working remotely, you can have a script and it just generates it, again, like I say, I don't know KiCad so well, but an Eagle, you can give everything a layer and you just pull it out of the source file, the title, the section number, and then you just generate it, CSV file, and you go, right, section 1.1, any comments? Yes, no. Section 1.2, any comments? And that came out of that book, How to Measure Anything, Measuring the Intangibles in Business. It's having it down to the resolution. Are we happy? Yes or no? And all the hardware engineers that I've showed this stuff, when they described it, they're like, no, that won't work. You don't need that. We're doing an op amp. Why would you draw a box around an op amp and call it, trust me. And then and when you're doing it face to face, it doesn't really matter. Somebody points at the screen or whatever, they on the table in front of you. But when you're doing it remotely and you're billing somebody for the time, all of a sudden it becomes like they're really buy in. Okay. Yeah. We're not,
I think even you just get rid of the, can everybody see my mouse? I'm waving the mouse around this one section.
Yeah. And it's working remotely. I mean, look, we're not paying you for section 1.1 to, 4.37. Like, we want to, we want to bill you to review section 5.2, and that's where all the comments are, because, my background is in semiconductors, reviewing eval boards and reference designs and all that. And, the boards could be enormous. Like, there could be a 30, 40 page schematic, and every, you get the design guy, the eval guy, the apps guy, they all come into the room, the product guy, the QA guy, and test guy. And then they all sit there going, okay, page one. And then they, it just takes so much time. It wastes so much paper if you print it out. If you put in the numbers of the section and you go, then it's just like reviewing chapter of a book. you know.
Yeah,
you
know. Yeah, yeah. So it's like a subsection or like a table of contents too.
Yes. Yep.
That's great.
And it and for quality control and you know, because sometimes people go, oh yeah, it's great. Oh yeah, we'll apply a process. So, you know, be it something like Agile or Six Sigma, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, like it, you know, whatever the process is, until people can see tangible examples of where it's useful, then. You know, it's just it's a concept, but for me that's one. I haven't worked out one for the layout reviews, and I'm open to suggestions, but for the schematics that works out, you know, that's worked out well for me.
In TiCad you can do sheets. The sheets are they number based on like, so they prepend the sheet number. So if it's like, instead of having, and I'm, this is not obviously part of just the KiCad thing, but it's like, so if it's on sheet one, it's going to be resistor R101, R102, whatever, or R1001, 1002, whatever. And you could even do subsheet, subsheet, subsheet. So if you really wanted to, you can go real bonkers, but then you have, you know, sometimes you have four number, you know, resistors, R10, 1204, you know, R1506. So that's the downside, but you could start to break out and say, okay, let's look at subsheet 15, whatever, I guess.
Yeah, for PCB review, you can, if you have someone to review it with, you can, you know, at least remote screen share, and then just same thing, kind of set up a checklist where you go, okay, we're going to go through each of these power rails and highlight them, and we're going to look at them together and make sure you got enough vias, got enough copper, and then you can kind of go through, you know, let's go through power, go through each of the power rails, and then go through and look at all the high speed and check your length matching, and you can kind of do the checklist approach on it.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Kieran brought up the idea of, you know, this book, How to Measure Anything in Business. How do all of you find the mishmash of running a business, albeit small businesses, and interweaving it with the deliciousness of engineering? How has that been going?
I try to spend as little time as possible in QuickBooks to satisfy my CPA, who happens to be my mother.
Oh, nice. Yeah, got that family connection. That's good.
Yeah. If I don't do things right, I get a talking to. So
finishing your homework.
Yeah. No auditor on earth is the same as your mom. Like, you know.
Why are you spending so much on resistors? Do you really need that new microscope? I don't think so.
Yeah, but it, you know, trying to spend the time on business development and bookkeeping and all, it feels like a distraction, but you know, it's a small business, so that's a big part of it, but it's almost tough to stop and go, "Oh, I need to go and balance my books in QuickBooks." Mm. It's got something you got to remember to do and pay the taxes.
Yeah. I had spent a bunch of time at the beginning of the year really like cleaning up my balance sheet and like learning how to read balance sheets better. And I didn't realize that I could like actually go and modify things like the chart of accounts it's called. And like, you can add your own thing in. So it was like, you know, like instead of just having one big chunk of like revenue and like stuff that's coming in, I can actually split it out. So I say like, oh, or it's not even just cost of goods sold. It's now like cost of goods sold, like amp hour t-shirts, you know, like cost of goods sold, parts for clients, parts for myself, and then actually like being able to split that out. And then it becomes like, it almost like makes your balance. I don't know if this is, I mean, my accountant said it looks okay, but like, I don't know if it's generally good, but I love it because now it acts as like a budget to be like, oh, well, like last quarter I spent a bunch of money on advertising, or I spent a bunch of money on equipment. And why did that happen? And oh, well, I bought the VNA, or I, you know, spent some money sponsoring this thing, you know? So that really, that's been a hack for me. And then when I do all the categorization that I have to do anyways, then it becomes like, it's like I'm budgeting, which I actually like doing better than accounting. So small mental switch, I guess, but I like doing that.
Yeah, I guess that kind of stuff is boring, but it's the important part of running the business. You know, it's again, it comes back to like the quality and the technical sense, like, you know, the, like with the documentation, it's the boring stuff, but it's the difference between success and failure. And as I say this now, I know when my wife hears this, she's going, yeah, you should follow your own advice, because the engineering is the fun. The engineering is the fun stuff. But of course, there's lots of engineers working full time in large companies. It's the difference is all the other stuff that you're required to do, whether you like it or not. And you need to be a grown up about it. And I'll be the first to admit, I don't always get that balance right.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's good because you I end up buying boards and stuff for prototypes and trying to keep track of how much you're spending on, especially when we're talking about your own product development, and you need to kind of track your costs and, you know, people, how many, do you have Excel sheets? Do you do it all in your bookkeeping software? It starts getting unmanageable if you don't rein it in.
It's like our managers all those years that we had to deal with them. We're like, why do they keep asking about this stuff? It's like, oh yeah, I get it. You know, it kind of like gives empathy for the other side now. It's like, oh yeah, they're asking about like timesheets because they need to know where my time's going. You know, like it's just like all the things that kind of flash back to me now. And I'm like, I would grumble about it at the time. And I was like, oh man, I was shit.
Yeah. I think that is so true. I mean, people ask me, you know, what's it like being out on your own and everything. And you could talk all day about it, like, but it basically, compared to, you know, being an employee, the highs are higher and the lows are lower. And you either accept that or you don't. But if I went back to my old job, so I was an applications engineer in different semiconductor companies, but if I went back to any of those jobs, I would be so much better at the job now, having a much more appreciation of sales and business development and the cost of sales and, you know, like even things like, I don't know, like bribery legislation. And, you know, you're in these big companies, you have to sit through this thing on, you know, the bribery legislation in the US or in the UK or whatever, like, and you're going, oh my God, like, why am I here, you know, wasting an hour of my time? But of course, there's often, though not always, good reasons for these kind of things. And I certainly have more of an appreciation of that now. So in terms of, well, why would somebody want to be, you know, a contractor or a consultant? It certainly won't help you. Or excuse me, it certainly won't hurt you. You know, I mean, nothing learned is ever lost. And if you try it and it doesn't work out and you go back to work for a larger company, you'll definitely be better for the experience, I think.
And I think the book part and the numbers and all that it's kind of fun because, I mean, you know, as engineers, we like to work with numbers. So it's just knowing your system, like you guys mentioned QuickBooks. I use another one called Xero. After spending a lot of time doing different things, you could do a lot of it, you know, in Excel, where you don't have to spend any monthly fee on some software. But I found, you know, my time's a lot more valuable working on clients or finding clients. So I ended up just trying to automate everything I can. So like even payroll, I pay a monthly fee to a service called Gusto, and that they file all your taxes. They'll even do states like Wyoming. I think that's automation's nice. Just, you should use automation when you can, because, you know, where's your time important? It's important to invest in your clients and work on their products. So by the time you factor in all that stuff that would take you doing it manually, you know, with Excel or writing yourself a payroll check, filing your 941s, or, you know, depending on how your business is set up, it's just worth using a service.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting point generally too, of like just paying for, you know, like I used to grumble about, I always did my own taxes before and I always did all that other stuff. And now it's like, oh, I'm willing to pay for this. I'm willing to pay for software. Whereas I might've like tried to, you know, find, obviously I use an open source software, but you know, certain things of software, I'm just like, I'll just buy it. I don't care. You know, like where the things I don't actually care about them, I just want the answer. And, you know, that
it's definitely a switch versus working for a company full time when your time is worth X amount per hour and you start looking at everything a lot differently, going, well, I should just pay for this service or product and spend my time working on billable hours because I can make more money.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask about war stories as well. Everybody's got good war stories. So let's hear some doozies. How long have you, include as well, like how long have you all been actually consulting too? Because I've only been doing it 20 months, I think now, something like that.
Yeah, I've been consulting full time for almost a year and a half now. And yeah, the biggest thing I've seen is maybe architectural issues where you should have used a system on a module and you come into a project halfway and they went chip down and you're having to debug all the chip down problems that someone else created. That's been my biggest headache. And yeah, just coming into things kind of half baked and half finished.
What about the module, like the chip down stuff? Like, why did they decide to do that, and why would you have advised them against that?
I don't know the whole history on why they went chip down. I think, you know, they thought, who knows, maybe it was they wanted more billable hours. That, you know, that's on the worst the worst side of things. But from
right
the other side of things, maybe they thought they would improve cost or performance. I don't know. But you know, it's just, you spent so many engineering hours on consultants trying to get this chip down Linux system working when you should have just bought a system on a module and put the headers down and called it good.
Okay, I thought you were talking more. Yeah, I was thinking more on like an RF module, but you're saying like a Linux module specifically.
Yeah, like a little Linux embedded computer where you know, you should have just purchased the SOM, made your custom board, plugged it in, and all the hard stuff was done.
Yeah.
So are you interested in hearing technical war stories or business war stories?
Whatever's better, man. Well, I'll let these guys answer. I don't know. Like, what do you guys think?
Whichever one's more interesting.
I guess that's the thing. Like, I mean, the technical challenges are always more interesting, you know, because, you know, okay, I encountered this problem and then I solved it this way. But of course, again, you know, from a consultant's perspective, the legal or the commercial challenges are perhaps more important in the long run. And that's, you know, with the forum, you know, you see the questions coming up, and I think we mentioned earlier maybe about insurance. I'm not sure if we'd mentioned it before we started or after we'd started, but these kind of concepts, or even legal jurisdiction, you know, because we're all in unusual places, and it's things like, okay, if you have to unfortunately end up in court with a client, I mean, what's the jurisdiction? Because I'm in Edinburgh and you're in various rural parts of the United States. And if you have to, you know, hop in a car or a plane or whatever to, you know, file papers in a courthouse three states away, it's inconvenient to say the least. Things like contracts, and that kind of thing. It's very important, and I haven't always got that right, that's for sure. You want to deal with these things up front as best you can. And that's something that I've kind of learned along the way. And, you know, particularly when I was starting out, I was naive and, okay, everybody will pay me and everybody's a good guy and everything. But, you know, of course, you know, in a
they're
big
company. Friends now.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, sometimes genuinely, you know, companies go bust, they can't pay you and everything. But then there's, I mean, if it's done in good faith and it just happens, there's, you know, there's creditor and debtor mechanisms, in, you know, in all jurisdictions to deal with that. And, you know, and one of the best experiences, we always think of the bad experiences perhaps, but one of the best experiences I had with a client was they were a large company, but the division that they were the division went bust, it went into administration here in the UK, and I was about halfway through a project, and I, you know, build up front, and I'd got a buffer in advance and everything, so, you know, I wasn't caught for the money. But one of the kindest things that the guy did for me is he lost his job that day, but pretty much the last thing he did before he was escorted off the premises was to ring me and tell me to stop working. Because if he hadn't done that, and it was a really interesting project that's going to, you know, involve, you know, lasers, like, so it was cool. And, I would have kept on working on it, you know,
without much contact too. You would have been like, why are they're just not calling me back, right?
Yeah, because, and these guys were losing their jobs and everything, and, you know, I totally wasn't on his radar. And he was an engineer, he wasn't a project manager or anything, you know, or perhaps a physicist or something, but he was a technical guy. But he rang me going out the door and said, stop working, file your invoice as it is today, and after that then you need to deal with the administrators. But it was very kind. It was very kind. And he was a good client. And, you know, if they popped up again and they come out of administration or something, I'd happily work with them again, because that was a very professional way of dealing with it. And, you know, I'm very grateful for that guy keeping me on the straight and narrow. And then, of course, you get other horror stories, which is as long as your arm. Mm-hmm. And that's the great thing about the forum, that, you know, that, like, you know, people can tell these stories in kind of long form, you know, replies to, you know, to queries and everything. So, I mean, it's a fantastic resource in that sense.
Yeah, it's been really good. Good to get to know people and and get like flavors of other, yeah, other war stories and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I guess I'll talk about a business war story. So I've been doing the consulting for 3 years now. And before I could even start doing it, my previous employer was going to be my client. And they're in an industry where bodily harm could happen. So, you know, you want to make sure you have good professional liability and also general liability. So I started looking around for the professional liability and I wasn't having any luck. And I mean, I tried local agents. I've tried a bunch of online companies. I'm a member of IEEE. So they're partnered with somebody for providing insurance, like professional liability, and they couldn't do anything either. So it took me about 4 months actually. And I found an agent actually in my own state, just in another part, Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And he was able to spend like a month and he found some companies that would provide quotes on Lloyd's of London. That's basically the insurance. I don't know. I guess they're just the insurance group that insures things that aren't covered by traditional insurance companies. So it was nuts. And I mean, I learned a lot just reading all of the policies. Like, it was just so much time spent, and that insurance ended up being astronomically high. And maybe for any of the listeners out there, maybe you know some insurance agency that would cover us. Electrical engineers, specifically consultants, you know, we could work in a lot of different industries that could be, you know, it could include medical or maybe just consumer or, you know, industrial. And we really need a company that understands, you know, what we do and that can provide coverage. Because anytime you go to an insurance agent and say, hey, you know, you need architects and engineer insurance, they're like, okay, you know, what kind of bridge are you building? Or, you know, what kind of electrical system are you working on, you know, in a building? And that's not the case. It's most people don't really understand, you know, what embedded consultants do. So
yeah, I think what they're really looking for is, and so Jeremiah and I have gone back and forth about this too, because we talked about the insurance on the forum and stuff. I think one of the big problems is just like, you know, insurance companies work off actuarial tables, and if they can't like put you on a table and be like, bridges fall down 0.004% of the time, it's like, okay, we can build a model based off that. And you know, like, electrical failures happen 0.006% of the time, yeah we could price for that too. What do? You do embedded consulting. Nope, no book for that. See you later. You know, it's like, it's just like so many corner cases. And so you have to like, and it feels like almost the more you say, the more corner case you put yourself into, like the more details they ask for. And it's like, but you have to, in order to not get sued when something bad happens and you think you're covered and you're like, no, we didn't actually cover that in the first place. So that's why Jeremiah is talking about actually covering himself. So. Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, I know. And yeah, you know, they can't cover everything because maybe, you know, they'll have specific riders or something for when you work on medical equipment or whatever, but that's okay. We just need somebody, you know, that could give us coverage and then maybe have those options. So when we do work on that, you know, they'll understand the liability and maybe, you know, how much extra their premium's going to be or whatever.
Right, exactly. It's like, I'm going to work on medical stuff. Okay, my rate has to go up because my insurance is sure as hell going up. You know, it's like, but yeah, there's nothing like that right now. So all of you insurance agents that are listening to the Amp Hour right now, give us a call. Our number is, yeah, right. You're not listening right now.
Yeah. Only call if you have a pandemic policy, you know, clause.
Oh, and you might find out that pandemic policies don't cover COVID-19, right?
Yeah.
So one of my buddies works for a large corporation, and he is in the purchasing department, and he said that all of the suppliers are like shouting force majeure, which is a thing that's in many, many contracts. It basically means that you don't have to deliver on the date you think it is, you know, that you contracted for or whatever. But he said that people are like saying it so often that he has a joke going that the people are shouting at, like Michael Scott says that he declares bankruptcy, like I declare bankruptcy. But now it's just that for force majeure. And he's like, that's not how it works.
there's a related field, I guess, you know, that I've been following on the forum on warranty, and you know, the expectation of warranty that a client can expect to have from again, perhaps it's different for a contractor or a consultant. It's different type of work. But, you know, there were some very interesting replies that, you know, were enlightening for me about, like, you know, along the lines of, regardless of what you've written down, you know, if the client feels that they've been let down and you don't make them feel, you know, that the, you know, the situation has been addressed satisfactorily, you know, you're never going to get business from them again. Whereas, you know, right. You can make up a lot of good mileage if and then you find it a lot with any company. If you have a bad experience with a company and you file a complaint and you feel that the complaint was handled well, then generally, you know, the company makes up mileage. I mean, there's lots of evidence for that. And it was one of the first things that I was taught actually as an applications engineer when I was in Xilinx as a graduate, that you know, you have the opportunity to turn people around on a poor performance or poor delivery. You know, it ties in with insurance because you know, it's going to cost you it's going to take time to fix something if you are bound by you know, some kind of warranty contract. But as well, of course, there's just the relationship side of things. I thought it was very interesting, and it sooner or later everybody's going to encounter that, where you want to make sure a client feels like they've been treated well.
Yeah, I think there's like work warranties and there's also product warranties, and each have their own. I think you're talking about both, right?
Sure. Yeah, and of course, if you're a consultant, you know, doing kind of consultancy work, you know, you can guarantee the input, but you can't guarantee the output. You know, oh yeah, I think you should acquire that business, and you know, there's just no way you can guarantee a good outcome. However, you can guarantee that the work was done well, and so forth. But it's a big field, and I'm sure there's lawyers and you know, of all ilks spending a lot of time and effort with this. But just generally, I thought, you know, the concept of, you know, the client needs to feel like they're being looked after regardless of what you have in the contract.
Warm fuzzies.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah
I will refer people to the so you want to be a consultant. I'll link that in once again. I've talked about that many times, and then I was extra pleased to see that at the end of Jack Gansel's article on consulting, Jack was on the show a couple weeks ago, but I didn't know that Jack had this long set of articles that he wrote about consulting. At the end, he goes, also, you should check out this So You Want to Be a Consultant. That made me feel vindicated.
I just think part of, you know, why consultants charge so much is you can, you know, you're paying your own insurance, you're paying your own taxes, but also, you know, charging enough that you can cover those warm and fuzzies after the fact.
Mm. You have an example?
Yeah, I'm just generally thinking, you know, you can kind of build in the warranty, the work warranty, into your price up front, so that when, you know, someone comes back and they may not necessarily have the money to pay you to do some, make some changes, you can warranty that work without hurting.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. And that's, you know, that's a kind of marketing almost too. It's like, yeah, I do good work, I'm willing to back it up, but with some small changes perhaps, and that might lead to future stuff. You know, it's all kind of tied together. I think as long as you're not getting stomped on, you know, like some people take advantage of you, and as long as you're certain you're not being taken advantage of, you're probably in the right to just go forward and do it. I'm pretty lucky. I haven't had any, like, I've had like very good clients so far. I've been very pleased with like the interactions. They've been all very professional. But some have just been like, you know, like the ones that I stopped working for, like the really short run kind of things. It's like, those are usually just because I don't chase it. You know, I don't want to like do more for them because it's maybe the less pleasant of the interactions or the work is less interesting. I mean,
yeah.
I think also like I have like target things that I'd like to work on, like target industries or target types of things I want to learn, things I want to continue to build skills on rather. And, you know, that usually gets a discount, or I'll go towards that more than I will like a product that's like something that I think is silly or isn't good for the world, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just to touch on Chris's comment too is, like, if there's something that I don't, you know, fully know on a client's product that I'm doing, then, you know, I just give them a discounted rate, or I don't bill them for the portion where I'm learning, only where I'm producing.
Yep. What are some things that you, so I asked about, like, you know, skills you want to be learning, whatever, but what are some skills that you see as critical to your business or your operation in the next, like, 5 years? Do you see anything kind of coming down the pipe? Like, as an example, I would say, like the open FPGA tool chain is definitely on my list of, like, things that I want to be learning and be able to deploy in a client project in the next 5 years.
Well, perhaps I'll be a bit contrarian here, and it's just from mistakes I've made in the past myself, that there is nothing from a technical perspective in any time frame, 5 months, 5 years, 50 years, that that I'm particularly concerned about. Because, again, when you're running a business, the whether it's a small business or a large business, whatever you can do to upskill yourself on the side, on the business side of things, gives you the time and the resources, you know, to learn the technical skills, be it, you know, a tool chain or a new technology like, you know, AI, you know, or machine learning, or, you know, whatever it may be. And that was a mistake that I made a lot when I was starting out. I thought that the challenge was the technical challenge. And I think, frankly, for me anyway, that was a mistake. The challenge was the business side of things. And the skills I should have been learning were the ones they don't teach you in engineering school or being an engineer in a large company. And the knowledge deficit for me certainly was on that side, because you can always, I think, like you said, Chris, you know, you can hire mentors or somebody to talk you through a technology. And, you know, there's lots of technical training courses and everything. Now, you need to keep an eye to it because you need to stay relevant. But for me, I think the mistakes I made early on were not appreciating the business side of things more. And that's where I'm spending my time now, trying to upskill, because I'm confident that I can learn the technical stuff or work with people that can teach me. It's a lot harder to identify the business skills, perhaps, when you come from a technical background. You know, that, I mean, that's just my opinion, and it will be different for everybody. It might come easier to some people than others. But you would say, you know, an appreciation of market cycles. You know, say what's happening in 5 years, and it ties into COVID-19 and, you know, economic battles between the US and China and all these kind of things. Now, you don't need to be an economist or an epidemiologist, but you need to have an appreciation of how these things might affect your market, and what are you going to do to be adaptable to that, you know. And that's something that I don't know what the answers are. I don't know if anybody at any level has the answers to that. Whereas no matter how difficult the technical challenge is, you can find somebody to give you the answer or guide you towards an answer. And that's just my opinion on it. It's more of a commercial challenge rather than a technical challenge.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I will say, I put out a call on the forum for, like, actually Jack Gansel's consulting articles, which I guess I'll link into. At the end, he talks about having a business coach. And I didn't talk to him when he was on the show about it, but I'm curious, and I'll put it out to the Amp-Hour audience. If anyone knows of one that's, like, you know, specific to consulting, I guess, or, you know, more generally just, you know, the hardware industry, I'd be very interested to talk to them. So send me a message if that's the case, chris@theamphour.com. But I think that's a good point, Kieran.
Yeah. Actually, just when you mentioned, I know.
It was very contrarian, though. I think, you know, that won't be allowed again.
You know? Yeah, I'd be beyond subscribing from the podcast. Like, you know, it's I know a guy. I know just the guy you're looking for. Unfortunately, he's dead. So, like, he's a very famous guy. You know, and
oh well.
Yeah, so he might be difficult to get as a guest. But luckily, there's a book.
Well, you know, Ouija board. You know?
Yeah. There's a book called A Billion Dollar Coach. Let me just check that. But Billion Dollar Coach, and his name is Bill. I can't remember. I don't know his second name. Sorry, I've read the book, but
Patriots coach, is it?
Yeah, Trillion Dollar Coach. Sorry, Billion Dollar Coach. Trillion Dollar Coach. Here it is, by Jonathan Rosenberg, Alan Eagle, and so this guy. Let me read the summary here. It's kind of what you're describing there. The team behind, you know, so it's Bill Campbell is the man's name, and it seems he was a very unassuming character, and but he was a coach to many of the Silicon Valley entrepreneurs that you'll, you know and love, you know, like Google guys and all that. And that's what he seemed to do. They all tried to put him on boards and everything. He said, no, I don't want to be on boards. I just want to be the coach to the C-level guys in all these companies. And it seems he was hugely respected, but unfortunately he's passed away now. But it seems he wasn't particularly well known because he was a very private guy. But to the guys that you would know, like he was the guy that they turned to. And the book was very interesting. Yeah. Not written by him, but written about him. So $1 trillion coach. But it's very interesting. But of course, how you translate down some of the lessons from, you know, large, you know, blue chip companies, like down to individual consultancies. Yeah.
So there's another book that I'm reading right now called Measure What Matters by John Doerr. Also Google coach kind of guy. And that's where OKRs come from, which is like one of those things where I was pushed back against them so hard when I was working for startups and companies or whatever. And like, yeah, I get it. Okay. I really don't have any snarky comment past that. I get it. I should have not been. I think the problem was the implementation when I was doing it. But even though Kieran said no technical, I want to hear if there's any technical from Alex. And
yeah, I think Kieran's hitting the head on the nail for that. You know, we're used to learning new technical things really, really easily. Yeah. Well, nail on the head. Yeah. So we're really used to learning new technical things, but maybe we're not as great at learning the soft skills and picking up all the business side of things. So I agree with that. From the technical side, I see, you know, I obviously work in UAVs and drones mostly, and the, you know, DC power storage and electric vehicles are going to be a big growing industry in the next 5-10 years. Just as more things get electrified and energy storage and power becomes a bigger problem, I think that that's where I want to keep learning on the kind of high power DC side of things.
Yeah, that's great. Any resources you found so far?
Just kind of lots of battery management app notes.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. A lot of all the TI BQ series, they've got lots of good app notes and everything there really, really gets you up to speed.
Yeah. And Jeremiah, any last thoughts?
Well, I agree with the others on the business side for me, like, for my company, at least, it's just I need to sell myself more often, you know, every chance I get. And on the technical side, especially in firmware, the common program is C. You know, there's some assembly left and there's C++. I don't think that stuff is really going to change for a while because we could see, you know, it's been here, what, since the 70s or something?
Yeah.
I think we will see, you know, a lot of the embedded systems move towards like ARM-based, you know, because you could get something so powerful. If it's not a cost-conscious product, then it's really hard to beat that, you know, unless you need something specific from like an FPGA or something. It's like, why don't you just use, you know, that cheap 32-bit ARM or whatever, so...
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah. And we've definitely seen that even just over the life of the amp hour, just of how cheap things are. I mean, yeah, now like RISC-V coming on the scene too and kind of pushing back on all the ARM stuff too. It's going to be interesting to see how those things kind of interplay with one another.
Yeah. And I'm hoping that RISC-V cost does come down because, you know, I was researching it myself just to see, you know, if I could get a processor or something, but there's still, you know, still don't compete in cost yet for the products that I'm working on. Yeah.
Well, guys, we've been doing this about an hour and a half now, so we should probably wrap it up, but thank you for all being here. Is there any thoughts you want to leave the audience with, or things that you're excited about right now?
Woo.
Just getting out for a beer at some point. Yeah, well, no, I mean, it's fantastic. And thank you, Chris, for setting up the forum. It's, you know, like just sitting there on a daily basis, just kind of reading the the different perspectives that people have. It's really interesting, and there's a lot of knowledge out there that people are willing to share, and I'm very appreciative of that.
Yeah, we'll have a link if people are consulting or interested in consulting. There's a application we'll have linked in for joining if people want to do. I guess this has been like a big ad for the forum, but we'll see if more people join. Well, who knows?
Yeah, I think my thoughts are, you know, open source hardware, software, all these tools and everything are going to keep getting better and better over the years. And really, it's really enabling a lot of it, the consulting, from consulting within an open source ecosystem to using open source tools to do your consulting. I think it's really a huge benefit to everybody.
I guess that does cut down on licensing costs, and not that, you know, time is obviously still a huge thing, but yeah, the straight up licensing might not be as much of a killer as it used to be.
I think just from the accessibility and learning standpoint, there's just a lot more information out there about certain topics because of open source projects.
Yeah. Well, great. Thank you all for being here. And where can people find you online? Jeremiah, where can people find you?
They could just find me on my website, embeddedbytes.io. You feel free to email me there or find me even on Facebook.
Great. Kieran, how about you?
Well, you can visit kieranoleary.com, but you know, it needs a bit of a facelift, or on Twitter, O'Leary Kieran. And if you find me on Twitter, you'll find me everywhere else.
And then, you can find me on LinkedIn under Alex Klemai, or I've got a website, arkelectron.com. And what else? I'm also on Twitter under arkelectron.
Great. Great. Well, thank you all for being here, and we'll see you all on the forum. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.